Welcome to Talk About Talk with Shanti Niven and Desiree Luthi. Shanti and Desiree are professional speakers and trainers of world-class speakers and anyone who wants to improve their oral communication skills and their lives. Listen in as they share their captivating speaker secrets over morning coffee. Tune in weekdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget to follow the show or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
It's been a week. Oh, no, not a week already. It was Friday Funnies on Friday. But yes, we apologize for not running our show as usual on a Monday morning. But we had to run a training at a school. And we had to leave here at the crack of dawn, didn't we? We were up at 5 o'clock in the morning and off we went to go and do this training. So it was quite the day yesterday. But we're back on air and hopefully the show will make up for it. We're talking about storytelling.
Continuing on storytelling from our last episode. So if you didn't catch that, you can go into our archives and check out the last episode where we shared a few secrets about storytelling, and we're going to continue to do so today.
Yeah. Some storytelling tips. I'll just do a quick rehash of a couple of the things that we discussed last time. We spoke first of all about the fact that stories are about people and characters. So I said this to a class, that stories always revolve around people or characters, and one of the kids said, well, it's also animals. But generally when the stories are revolving around animals, they are anthropomorphized. They are made to be human or have human qualities or human thoughts. And so it's always a kind of a chance to get into our heads and express vicariously through the characters. So we live through the characters. Number two was to let your characters speak for themselves and not talk about them, but rather let them talk and express their way through so that we actually see who they are from the dialogue. When you meet somebody, you get to know that person through what they say. And the same as the characters, get to know them through what they say.
Also their actions.
Yeah. And then to remember that your audience's attention spans are very limited. And so you need to keep people interested all the time. You need to keep them engaged. You need to get the action moving and the story moving. Don't waffle on with unnecessary details. As I spoke about last week, some authors are well known for doing this, going into too much detail, backstory, subtext, and you need to keep that story moving. You need to keep some intrigue going. Put in a little bit of mystery here and there or some questions that need to be answered. Get the audience moving along. And then the last one, which is what actually is going to move us into this week, is talking about emotions.
Emotions, that's how we connect as humans. We spoke about this last week as well, and we are eager to connect with each other, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. Having people around you in the human connection is one of the fundamentals of what? Being human. We need people. We need the emotions. And even our thoughts, anything we speak about, any stories, have emotion behind them. And that's so important in the presentation when you're sharing a story as well, is having that emotion, creating that tone, and setting the atmosphere for the audience.
One of the best books that I've read that has really enlightened me in the last 5 years, I would say, is the book Made to Stick. Mm. And if you read in that, it really talks about it. It's really a great book if you're going to be wanting to write stories, because what it's about is about what it is that makes certain things go viral. What are those ideas that stick, that people think about, share, and ponder upon? So, and one of the points is, obviously, it's concrete, it's visual, they can see it. But one of the main things, I think, is that it stirs the emotions. So,
which is the connection. It pulls them in. And there's a quote, I apologize, it's one of those ones we spoke about. It's either by Mark Twain or Anonymous. I have no idea who it's by. This is what the quote says. There are two ways to share knowledge. You can push information out, or you can pull them in with a story.
That's a really great
one. And it is true.
That's a really great one. And that's very, very true. And it's funny that you said that about quotes, because if you actually look at certain quotes, such as the one that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, that's been attributed to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But I generally find when people don't know who to give it to, they give it to Mark Twain, as I said yesterday.
But you go on any of these websites, you can see it from one person, you can see it from someone else. So you never know for sure who it came from.
I know. Well, you've got to trust that it was said by somebody. And can you imagine how peeved the person would be who originally...
Neither of them said it. My name is anonymous, and I did say that.
Well, if I came up with a quote, like, you have to get over yourself to get into others, my quote, and somebody else starts quoting it and taking credit for it, I would be peeved. But anyway. Okay, so the number four is stories stir up emotions. How do you stir up emotions? Stories are not meant to be manipulative, but it's not the dramatic effect. But we get a lot of information thrown at us every single day through advertisements, commercials, and just information thrown at us. And it's this, our brains are meant to filter most of this out. And it's only when we stop and we say, wow, think about that. One of the things that's good to look at is what gets passed on Facebook. What's really going viral? Why is it going viral?
Always something about puppies and kittens.
Well, now,
oh, well, he's a mine.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing as well. They used to say the formula for a movie, have a child, have a dog.
Oh.
You know, you'll see that a lot of movies have that, and it's the cuddle factor, because it's going for the woman. And woman's a huge market. And so if you can appeal to women in their nurturing state to have some child in need and a dog in need and cat for humor, because I think cats are humorous, that's just a recipe for success. So if you can wind all those three things into a story, even better.
You know what I love about stirring up emotions is being able to give the audience a place, and it's how they feel about it. So we have a selection of different foods here, and we all have different tastes. But all of a sudden, one part of that, I know that's the one I want. That's my piece. That's gonna touch me the most, and I'm gonna feel certain things, whether it's good or bad. And for you, it'll be something different, perhaps. But it's our imagination that leads us down that path.
Yeah.
It takes us on a journey, and we put
our
own thoughts.
That's an interesting thing, because when you get into the study of this, you find that, I always say this, there are different flavors for different people.
Oh, yeah.
But there are different, there's also certain things that appeal to everybody.
And you know, and that generality is very important as well, to have that.
Absolutely. So we're all curious, for example. Mm-hmm. We're all curious creatures. So when you use something...
A mystery.
Yes, the knowledge gap. Yeah, something that's coming up, and people are interested. If you hint at something being revealed somewhere down the line,
Shanti's good at that. I have something to tell you, I just can't tell you right now. I'll tell you later. Actually, I'll tell you once after dinner.
I thought that was a milk.
That was too funny. He's like, what is it? I've been waiting months to hear this.
And then he was laughing so much. He was just laughing and laughing.
But that's where the intensity builds. The tension is all there. It's like, what's going to be revealed?
And then getting back to the emotions, stories stirring emotions, you cannot stir other people's emotions unless they exist and they're present within you. And so I find that sometimes people tell stories, but they're not telling it in a way that they're actually unrolling it, the story, with the emotion that comes with it. So if you have emotion and you express that emotion and you're present in that moment,
you have to.
It is expressed with your body and with your voice.
Mm.
Yesterday when I did the teacher training, what is my training about? 80% of it is stories.
And how do you, because stories grab people's attention. I don't care if you're a 5-year-old or a 55-year-old.
Mm.
It grabs your attention. People That's love exactly stories.
And it doesn't matter how old they are either. You know, there was a different range of teachers there, but there was an elderly teacher as well, too, actually. And I noticed when I was telling stories that they were just
engaged.
As leaning forward and into it and engaged. And that was really what I was trying to teach them as well, is to wind. And sometimes you have to actually tell them this, because they kind of wonder, why are you telling me this story? And you have to connect the dots for them after the fact. But I'm constantly demonstrating what I want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I can't teach teachers in one day to just suddenly be brilliant. But I'm hoping that by showing them, that gives them an idea, which comes to the next point, which is stories don't tell, they show. And so rather than go lecture style, you are showing people through the example of the story, through the choices of the story, for example. Very often when we're telling a story, I do this at a school, for example, I'm telling kids, and I very often tease them, and I stop at the critical point just before the climax or before the resolution, and I say, oh, oops, we're out of time. Next week, and they all go, no!
they just get very upset and, no, we've got to know what happened. And then if I really am cruel and I do leave it, when break time comes, this is the rock, and they all jump all over me and they want to know exactly what's going to happen. And so I really build that tension, mm-hmm. and they need that release of tension, which is exactly what it's about. It's building up to a climax. There has to be some sort of build and great tension.
And anyone can do that, and any subject, by the way. Even teachers mm-hmm. can do that with their subject. It doesn't necessarily need to be public speaking. It is any subject can, it just takes some creativity and time and practice.
Well, the teacher that was doing, they were doing all their story plans yesterday, or their story plans, what the heck am I talking about? Lesson plans. What we did is I did the teaching part, and then they had to break up and do lesson plans for one another and get critique. And the lesson plan, one of the teachers that I got, because we divided into three, Desiree, myself, and Marie. And so each of us had about four teachers working with them, which was really cool, actually, because we got them one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Desiree, of course, gave me the worst. No, I would say the worst. How awful is that of me to say that? I just mean the more, through body language, we can tell who's going to be the more difficult, the more inflexible to certain ideas. So she gave me these ones. But what was interesting was that the one teacher got up and talked about the story of Oedipus. And I thought, wow, you're telling eighth graders the story, because, of course, the story of Oedipus lands up that he actually sleeps with his mother. And I'm thinking, how do you tell? I know eighth graders, how they're going to react to that. And how, as a little, you know, it's foretold as a little boy, but it's a story. But when she told, she kept on backtracking and explaining and stopping and
yeah,
saying,
a couple of my teachers did some segues. Oh, by the way, this means that. And by the way, this means that. And
I know.
Segues.
And then writing the name on the board. And it's very teacher sort of stuff. And I said to her, you don't need to do that. I said, you just get. I was, even though I know the story of Oedipus, and of course the word Oedipus is used in Oedipus Complex. But I was telling her that you just need to get into the story and the kids will. And then afterwards you can write, and would you want to have a name Oedipus itself? It's with an O, not an E. And get them to connect the way that I do when I tell the stories about connecting and creating connections that allow them to remember. But tell that story and take them to the scene of where they are and explain, you know, what's happening in the story rather than explaining about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so stories don't tell, they show. And
that was a great example of what you just did. And I also, similar thing, just to put another example, I had a teacher that was more of the lecture style, and he was talking about the NCAA, which is college athletics, and all the sports within the college universities. And he was basically going through the history of it, and it was very lecture style, very much the dates in the 1940s. It was Bob, and Bob did this, and the names, and they all went over my head because of how he presented it. And then he had to keep backtracking, like you were saying, because us in the room, we didn't know what these things meant, and he had to go back and explain what they meant, but it was just out of order. It was jambles. And I said, his goal of this was to share how, in a way, it's a kind of corrupt thing, because the NCAA, these athletes get straight A's in class because the teachers are told that these athletes have to get good grades in order to play. And the college and the colleges receive so much money because of these athletics. I mean, the televised part of it, all of this stuff raises the college a lot of money. So because it raises the college so much money, it's able to fund other programs like the science, the engineering programs, and get the best quality professors into those programs because of the sports. So he's saying, is it a good or bad thing? But what I had told him is turn it into make it a real piece. Share with us a basketball player, a football player, who is getting all of their grades passed for, and then you have the engineering student who's getting the top world-class professor because of this.
I would do in a class like that, for starters, bringing in, because now Common Core is starting to recognize oral skills, is I would present the problem, and then I would have a debate. I'd say, now you...
He did. Oh, he did. It was so good. The end, he did. He asked, I'm putting it on you. What do you... And he put a thought-provoking question
to
the group.
But it's not just getting them to debate, getting them to actually be those characters so that you can get into the head. You're on the board of this college, and you know that you're not going to get this money, which you need desperately for science and this and that and the other. Argue your point as to why you think it's that you have to go ahead with this practice, and then you're on the other side. You're the person who's for the greater good.
You know, you argue the other side and then put people in different roles. So it's very important to embroil people within the stories, and that was a great example. And I think as well, when you're in the story, this is a lot of the problem with teachers, if they do this, they intellectualize everything too much. It's very academic. And as Desiree and I have seen, honestly, by the time I've gone to different schools and I've seen it over and over again, I start to realize why kids have such a problem with concentration. And the teachers are, the biggest gripe is that they have behavioral issues. Don't we hear that all over and over again?
And you know what the other common thing is that I'm hearing from a lot of these teachers, especially foreigners, teachers that are not from America.
Yeah.
And it's not anything against foreigners at all. It's just this seems to be a common question is, well, why should the kids get a fun and learning environment when I didn't have that growing up? Where
oh
I was thrilled
goodness.
To be in school. I wanted to be there. I didn't need my teachers. I got, because I know for my dad here, he went to school here in Woodland Hills, and he used to get smacked. You used to get hit. And I found that to be just so shocking. But he said it wasn't the same. You know, you had the boring teachers. The Ferris Bueller example is what he went through. And they hated it, from what my understanding is. So I don't understand why they reference back to that.
It's an interesting thing because parents hated their school. I can tell you I hated most of mine.
Every parent I've ever spoken to.
Had one teacher that really stood out. But the funniest thing is we look back at it, you always look back through the years, but there's a sort of a fondness even to that you can tell these stories about this teacher or that teacher or the other teacher. But here's something I want to say, maybe a little bit controversially, and that is that I do not think, because you get teachers like that who are saying, well, why should these kids be pandered to, and they're undisciplined, and there's behavioral issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed, oh boy, I'm going to get into trouble. Americans are going to hate me. I am so grateful to be here in this country. But there is also a culture which is engendered by the parents of disrespect. You are not teaching your kids to listen, and then you're sending them off to school. Because the reason you're not teaching them to listen is because you don't listen.
Uh-oh.
If I ask your kids, which I do all the time, I ask the kids, don't I do this in the classroom? I'll say to them, do your parents listen to you? What do they say, Desiree?
Every time, nope.
Every time.
But also, even worse, is they say their teachers don't listen to them either.
Nobody listens to them. And so what these kids have, for starters, now I'm not saying you drop everything and the child becomes the center of the universe, because I do believe there has to be a balance between structure and discipline, and there's your time and your place to speak. There has to be that. Kids have to understand, because this entitlement that some kids have as well is also very negative. But when you listen, please be present. Listen. Why do kids scream and treat me like a celebrity when I arrive at the school is because when I'm there, I really care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to their little stories. And they are amazing. They teach me stuff. I'm not just throwing that out. They do. They've got such a unique spin on things. Let's move this through because we're actually getting out of time.
Can you believe that we're almost at the end of the show already?
I know.
So yes, number six. So we just went into stories don't tell, they show, which we've demonstrated there. And number six is stories have at least one moment of truth.
Mm.
And you let that sink in. That's one of the, I feel a lot of people when they tell stories, they go through it so quickly that they don't let anything sink in. They don't let it just resonate with the audience for a moment. It's the pauses that are so important to let those certain moments, those key parts where you emphasize that and let it soak in.
What you always want to achieve is an aha moment. So every story, for example, when I tell the eagle story, which I tell over and over again, it's going to eventually become...
Everyone's going to hear it. They're going to know the answer.
But it's funny. I do the setup, and I always hear Desiree laughing, which gives me such a chuckle because her laugh is particular. And so I always hear, just before the reveal, her laughter because it's predictable. I always ask the same question, and I always get the same response, which is the wrong response. Which is exactly what I've set everybody up to do. So I tell them this whole story, and I paint the picture, and the visuals are there, and then I ask them the question. So what do you suppose the eagles do? And they all say the same thing. Now, I'm not going to give it away on the show, and then it's the wrong answer. Now, that's a way to set them up. And that's the moment of truth, because the moment of truth, when I reveal to them what the eagles actually do, it doesn't go intuitively with what their mind thinks. Because their minds think, oh, here's a problem, here's how to solve it. But it's not the obvious answer.
When I provide them the alternate answer is exactly what I want them to learn. And so that's the lesson. That's the aha moment. And every story has to have that point. It has to have a point where people think, oh, that's an alternative way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an obvious way and then there's this alternative way.
Mm-hmm.
There is another way. And a lot of teachers have been doing things one way and not realizing that that's not necessarily the right way. Because what I'm seeing from a lot of attitudes, I didn't see that there were some really passionate teachers here, so
oh,
I've got to say
absolutely.
That. But they're passionate but misguided in some respect. I think that teaching could possibly, for a lot of people, could destroy their love and passion if they don't direct it in the right way. If you go to school and you've got all this passion and the kids just don't listen to you and they're rowdy, which happens. You know, we heard, for example, we sent Alan off to a school yesterday, and I realized one thing when you heard his voice and he sounded a bit deflated. We both had those moments. No matter how great a teacher you are, you're going to have moments where your kids don't listen to you and they don't behave the way you want them to behave. And it can make you feel very deflated. It's just a fact, but you've got to, something's got to keep you going, some juice, something's got to keep you going. Okay, so the aha moment is very important, and you've got to ask yourself in the story, am I just telling a story to make everybody laugh? But when you're telling a story in class, and did you find some of the teachers were saying, well, how do you tell stories when I'm teaching math or
no.
I'm teaching science, or you didn't have
not
that?
With my group. My group was very much in the story, already in the storytelling and explanation side.
Because if there's one skill the teachers could learn, it's storytelling, even with math.
They can fine-tune some skills, but so they did what they do best, which is more, I had three different types of speakers. I had one lecturer, I had one performer, and one conversationalist. And they all had different ways of doing it, but all three of them were very effective in how they did it because their voice, they set the tone. I knew immediately what kind of teacher they were, and because they were all different in class, I would love it.
Yeah. One of the teachers that I had was talking about, she was talking about genes, and she was talking about, for example, two brown-eyed parents, and would they have a blue-eyed child? But she did it in a very scientific, academic way. So she talked about a recessive gene and did it all, showed up a table up on the board, and immediately I actually lost attention immediately, and I thought, oh, how do the kids concentrate? And then I said, how can we make this a story? How can we turn this into a story, make this into real people? Talk about Mr. and Mrs. Smith and bring in a story and how that then displays what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the eye dot. I always call it the eye dot, which is the left right kind of, you know, what do you mean? And we need to get out of the patterns of academic speaking.
Make them real people.
Yes.
Get a real...
Because although you can train kids' minds to receive a lot of information, there are a lot of children in the class that are missing out on information because they cannot concentrate through that kind of academic. There's always those kids who can, but there are kids who learn in different ways. Okay, so they have to have the moment of truth, the story. And then the last one is, which is really a follow-on to this, is that it has to have a clear meaning. Now, you've heard me tell a lot of stories yesterday, a lot. I mean, it literally is one story after the other, some shorter. Each one has a clear meaning. Each one illustrates
in parallel
some principle and parallels, exactly. When you speak your final line, and normally that should be, for me, it's always, that's almost the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak your final line, everybody in the audience should know and understand. When I feel very disappointed and I know I failed, which I do, is where I have to provide for the explanation. Somebody's not quite sure what I meant. And when I have to do that, I think, okay, I failed. How can I tell that story better so that people get it?
Mm-hmm.
And that means everybody. Okay, there might be one or two always. You know, some people are just resistant, and you can watch by their body language. They're sitting there with their arms crossed, their lips pursed. They're not looking at you. Those people are resistant. No matter what you tell them, they are not going to receive it. It's just there are people like that. And I say this as well, when we hand out our review forms and I watch people, we have different scores from poor to excellent, 1 to 5. And I was watching the teachers fill out, most of them are doing the excellent, but there are some people,
but
it doesn't matter
how... analyze everything.
It doesn't matter how brilliant you are, you could really give them the performance of a lifetime, you could really give them value, and they are not going to give you an excellent. They just won't. And I think there are certain teachers like that, and you can see that. They'll mark you all very good, but they're not going to give you excellent.
And the same with your stories. There are people who are going to be very open to your stories, and there are going to be people who are a little bit more resistant. The final point is, your stories need to have a clear meaning to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to not necessarily slap them in the face, but they need to know what the story means. Otherwise, you failed as a storyteller.
You have to walk away with an understanding, a clear message that really illustrated what your point was. And it's easy to do. It's all about hitting that punchline. And I'm one of those people with the jokes that are terrible where I always forget the punchline. It's like, oh, wait, I think I just said the punchline wrong.
Oh,
and you have to start over again. Oh, oh.
That is fail.
That is a fail.
Fail big time. If you can do that in a social setting when you're having a few drinks with some friends, if you are on the stage, you need to know your story. You need to know exactly how to get to your punchline. When you get to your punchline, it has to be delivered with the greatest of finesse, because that is the defining moment.
That impact, yeah.
And Desiree gets away with it sometimes because she's the president of our club. And she gets up and she tells a little story. She's cutesy. So she says, oh, I did that again. Everybody laughs. And that's part of the punchline. But not when you're teaching and you're in a position of authority. I would never let you get away with that. And you wouldn't. Because there's preparation. And it's the most important part of any presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I will spend a lot of time preparing. Even though I know this presentation I did yesterday, I've done it many times. Was it the same as I've done it every time? No, it wasn't. I always try to improve.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel yesterday I could have even improved on that. You know, I always look back on what I do and think, how could I make that better? And so getting to the stories have a clear meaning is that when you end your story as well, it comes to, as we just said, the punchline of a joke. But in a story, there is, as Nancy Duarte refers to, the star moment. And I love that. I'm going to, when I love something, I adopt it. I don't need to invent something new.
Mm-hmm.
And STAR moment is an acronym for something to always remember, STAR, something to always remember.
Mm.
So what do you want the audience to feel? What do you want the audience to remember? What was the critical moment in the story? And that is what you need to leave them with. So we've now given you some, we won't call them 7 secrets because they're not too secretive, but 7 tips to writing good stories, and if your stories don't have those 7 elements, then you need to think about how to incorporate them. And next Monday, hopefully we will be able to be on air on Monday, we will be continuing the storytelling. We'll be talking about how to bring in some of the performance aspects.
Oh,
writing a good story is one thing. Delivering a good story is another.
You gotta sell it. And they say the greatest art in the world is the art of storytelling.
Yes.
Go out there and master it.
Yes.
Master it.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And as I said, it's a Tuesday, not a Monday, but we'll try to get back on track for next week.
Mm.
We've been busy, busy, busy bees, and we're very grateful for that because our business is growing and mushrooming and our team is growing, and this has been a fabulous journey. And thank you for your support. Our listenership is up to just under 3,000, so hopefully we'll just keep the push going. Thank you for listening in, and we will see you next week. And with that,
as always, stay captivating.
Woo! And now, what's going on?